Good morning, everybody. So,
thank you.
My name is Laura Merrifield, and I'm here from Building Healthy Communities Long Beach. I'm a community organizer, so I'm going to just kind of tell you guys a story about our language access campaign in the city of Long Beach, California. Many people may be familiar with language access in the healthcare system, in our courts, but I'm really speaking to language access as a tool for civic engagement. So these are some of our coalition members. The day we won funding, so that's the surprise we won. So I'll share more as we continue. I have no relationships to disclose. So Building Healthy Communities Long Beach is a project of the California Endowment, a large foundation in California that is funding 14 sites in California for 10-year periods, so much longer-term grant making, really focused in health outcomes and improving them in areas of high need. And for us in Long Beach, that's specifically sort of our central and west areas where we saw just a lot of health disparities. And specifically in Long Beach, we're really dedicated to providing a collaborative. There's over probably 60 groups that we work with, and some of them are, you know, there's funding, a little funding that goes to the city and to major health organizations with working with the university, but also some very small grassroots groups, those sort of storefront groups that were mentioned before as well. So a large mix, and it's given the opportunity for groups that never had funding before to come to the table in making community change. We're really focused on youth and resident engagement, collaboration and resource sharing, and also communicating our message, sort of shifting the narrative, right, about all these things that are really coming from our communities. Of course, with this broad goal of improving community health. A little bit about language access in the city of Long Beach. So we have a very diverse community. After the Vietnam War and the Khmer Rouge, Long Beach was a city where the majority of Cambodian Americans resettled. So we have a very large population. We have a lot of Latinos, African Americans, Pacific Islanders. So a very diverse community. So about 45% of residents speak a language besides English at home. And 20% of all residents in our city are what we call limited English proficient. And these are the folks who language access is so important for, right? That one in five members of the city really do need those support services. Spanish is by far the largest language spoken, but again, a significant amount of Khmer speakers, Cambodian language, also Tagalog or Filipino speakers. Other smaller numbers, Vietnamese, Chinese, other languages kind of come in at much lower numbers, but are also represented in our community. And this one is important to me, that 11% of all households are linguistically isolated. And that's really, that isolation, I think, is what speaks to why this really is a public health issue, where you have 11% of households where no one over the age of 14 can fluently speak English. And that's, you know, folks who are often disengaged kind of from the civil society they're participating in. Those numbers are very concentrated in our API households. That speak other languages, right, where you have this very high need, often in geographic areas as well, that play out on maps of race and all of those fun, you know, social determinants we like to talk about, right? So what is language access? I really like this picture because it speaks to there's a resident at the bottom there who is sharing her testimony to city council with an interpreter at her side, right? So she is engaging in community. She is sharing her story in her own words and being listened to. So I think for us, that's the biggest part of what language access, which on the surface is translation and interpretation, really means. Being heard, right? Being able to participate in these civic processes. Also using basic services in one's language. You know, we had folks who had their gas turned off all winter because the outreach that they could have qualified for the low-income gas program was not available in their language. Folks who stressed about medical equipment that need to be plugged in and not being able to afford that electricity bill when the right outreach and language access would have solved that problem. Young people who translated for police in situations of domestic violence, really inappropriate situations, right? So getting away from that. Also just that greater inclusion in community. And I think we know sort of the public health benefits that can come when a community is more connected. Even actually English speakers, when we did this campaign, were kind of sharing, I want to be able to talk to my neighbor. What does it mean to actually have, you know, deeper connection within our city? So just the timeline a little bit. This is a multi-year campaign and process. But in 2011 was when a motion was first proposed on this idea to write a policy. Our coalition formed when no policy had surfaced, right? When we realized we needed to advocate for this to actually happen. Then in 2013, it did pass. We went a year with nothing really happening. We learned that money is the deal breaker. So in 2014, we received, not ourselves, but the policy received funding from the city. 2015, some more funding. So I'll kind of go into these milestones, but to sort of give the time frame of what we're working off of. So the coalition was formed. There's some residents who were there in 2011. Early days of the Building Healthy Community Initiative had kind of come together. One of our council members who is in the 6th District of Long Beach, which has high Cambodian, Latino, and African American populations, sponsored this, at least at the beginning. And they actually named 5 community groups to work with. So they said, the city is going to work with these community groups and make a policy. Well, you know, about 5 months later, so beyond the 120 days, they said they'd come back in. Those community groups got together and said, hey, no one's given us a call. There's no policy. What's going on, right? And I think also, you know, speaking to groups that are named by the city, in the end, our coalition grew and shifted beyond those groups because the groups the city named perhaps didn't capture the whole scope of what we needed within our language access. And I will speak that initially, I think, and this is really important for folks who are working in public health collaboratives who are told, hey, work with some community groups, you have 6 months, go do it. Well, it takes a long time to build trust, to build good working relationships, to actually kind of agree on the level of action, advocacy, what the group is going to do. So our coalition had to spend some time. We had, you know, ups and downs and rocky moments. Some groups left, other groups entered. Before we actually kind of agreed on what we were fighting for, how we were going to do it, people's funder relationships, what level of advocacy they wanted to take. And this coalition was separate from the city. There was no city representation. We were really there to push the city along. And just, we had a very diverse community, group of coalition members. And I do want to share this because we had several groups, Cambodian serving groups, Latino and immigrant serving groups, Filipino serving groups. We also had folks that were working on issue areas, housing, immigration, environment, education, and we're seeing that the language was coming up. It was the shared thread that brought people to the table. And we also had the help of the Legal Aid Foundation of Los Angeles, who was able to help through the legal processes, drafting strong language in our advocacy. And Building Healthy Communities was kind of an umbrella, also provider of resources for the coalition, though there was no direct funding for any of these organizations. And so the first thing we did as organizers is we really collected stories. We went to the ground. So our first forum was in 2012, where we really just, we did a survey. We also did focus groups and said, and kind of framed it in terms of what are the priorities? Where do we want to see language access in the city? And it was really important that we were informed by community residents that we weren't just saying, I think people want more emergency services. We wanted to say, where are people really seeing these gaps? So we submitted a report. We also utilized a policy that was from Oakland, California, shares some characteristics with Long Beach, and we really liked several aspects of that policy, so we gave that as an example, highlighted some of the things. So we said, look, city, you're not working with us, but we're going to work with you and tell you, here's all of our you know, comments for what a policy should be. Then we waited a little while. It took a little while, and we learned part of this was where we had fallen in the city's budget year, where their interests are, and also our coalition, kind of after putting on a big event, took some time to regroup as well. But this is the phase we called dislodging the policy, because we'd submitted our letter. We hadn't really heard anything. It didn't seem to be a political interest. Again, we're coming up on a year after the 120 days that we were supposed to get a report back in. So we continue to gather stories and testimonies, engage community residents. We started to build those relationships with city council members, lobby visits, building allies, press and media, bringing out a lot of people when we went to city council, right? Showing the strength in numbers and acting as a coalition, not dividing ourselves over small issues. Again, that was sort of from that initial trust we had taken the time to build. So in early 2013, a policy was released. We got about a 30-day waiting period to review it. And at first, it only included Spanish. So of those language needs, you know, those 15,000 Khmer and Tagalog speakers, well, 30,000, they said, no, those don't matter. Only Spanish speakers are covered. And we said that's just not acceptable. And also, there were various provisions that we had advocated for that were not in it. And this is a really, this piece, I think, speaks to the strength of our coalition. Within that 30-day period, Khmer, the Cambodian language, was added to the policy. City representatives let the Cambodian-serving organizations know, said, hey, Khmer's in the policy, you're all good now, right? And those organizations said, thank you for adding Khmer, but we're still going to advocate for a stronger policy. And I think that really showed the solidarity of the coalition. That's how we did advocate for the inclusion of Tagalog as an official language. We also advocated to include language line services to account for all those other languages, right? It's a phone line where you can connect to a translator for a fee-for-service model. We also wanted accountability from the city, being able to come back at a regular interval to report on this process. And I think that says action when it may mean to say training for staff so they knew what the policy was. So the policy passed in 2013, and a motion on the floor from one of our council allies really put in many of the things we asked for. We didn't get everything at once, but we did get Tagalog, as I said, added, and various pieces here, right? Translation, interpretation, public notice of the policy, so people knew, right, that it would exist, directory of staff, and they said, you know, hiring more bilingual staff members, phone messages, voicemails, and also these compliance hearings. Now, these were all these pieces, and throughout our implementation stage, we really went back and said, what are the things you promised to do, and where are they happening? So these are different community members filling the council chambers. Our Khmer elders actually came out in strong force to support this. Though our first signs, our big phrase was, my voice matters, and the initial translation we had said something more like, my voice is annoying. So we had to edit that for the second time around. The Khmer seniors were really embarrassed and said, I don't want to wear this. And we also had young people, right, who were sharing their stories of interpreting for their parents being in that really tricky middle situation. We went into implementation. We did a lot of community education, know your rights, right, talking about the policy. We said, we have this policy. We want people to know it, to use it. But we found that, you know what, there wasn't really anything that had changed. And so we kind of kept using those biannual report backs. This was the first one we had in 2014 to really say, you know, it says access denied. Is the city doing its job to really come and raise that voice and push back, saying you voted for this, make it happen, right? We did our own testing as well, which is a great way to engage community residents in the process. Phone calls, walk-ins. We actually compiled about a 6-page report that was a key tool for our advocacy to community, to our city council members and others, right? But by and large, people were not reaching someone who spoke their language, were not receiving useful information. So we found that this was something we could highlight and say, all these things in the policy are not fully happening, and we have that kind of that proof, right, to show it. So again, we kind of realized through building those relationships with city council members and all of this that the reason nothing had happened because funding was never allocated. So the city basically said, yeah, we have this piece of paper, but where's the money to do it? Which is, I think, a really frustrating point for those of us who believe in, you know, kind of well-intentioned governments, when it's really like, unless there's a price tag attached, we're not going to see action. So we turned our organizing efforts to the budget, to getting that funding. We had many elections in 2014 for council seats, for a new mayor, a fairly progressive group. So we built relationships offline to really have folks who would champion our issue when it came up. And we did finally, and I have a little bit of an antagonistic relationship with our city staff because they purposely not talked to us so many times and been hard to reach throughout this whole process. But because of our political leadership pushing them, they did reach out, and we worked with them on especially identifying the documents that were our priority to translate. And also, we actually worked with the city attorney to finally craft that sort of that part of the policy around we are not to use children as interpreters and kind of what that looks like, right, in a reasonable policy that the city could actually implement. And so here, you know, in 2014, we did secure funding, so that was our second big win. A year later, we got funding. So now what? We're going on 3 years after this first motion, and we're starting to get to what might be a real, active, robust policy, which is why we kind of needed this longevity and commitment to our organizing. But so various speakers, and that's Lokong Kim, who's one of our Cambodian speakers, a Filipino organizer, Alex Montances, and our sort of debrief group there. So we were awarded $250,000 in fiscal year 2014-15. Coming up with the right number was also difficult because they had, you know, many different price tags on things, but ultimately this was $100,000 more than the city wanted to give us, so we had advocated for at least adding that greater amount, and we won that on the floor. I think we took money from like artificial turf. So very strange how funding sources kind of come together, right? But during the budget process, we were really excited about this. Also, a partial staff position was funded separately from that. And so implementation actually began. And then most recently, this year, we have seen steps. We've seen certain things that are happening, and you can now call the city, any department, and you will get a phone tree in four languages that ask you to, you know, see where you're going. We're still continuing to implement and to see where it can go, but that's exciting. So an additional $80,000 was funded this most recent fiscal year in budget process. And as a coalition, you know, I'll talk about some of our next steps, right, in terms of where we want to go in the advocacy in the future. This is a graphic that we used, I believe, in around March of this year that was sort of saying all this timeline and where are we, right? So the coalition continues to ask for full implementation and really monitor it, keep an eye out. Also, moving off the city's timeline. So there's a lot that's been sort of, and many coalitions may fall into this model where we were sort of responsive to those sources of power, and we're moving back to say, you know what, let's make sure we're engaging with community, because sometimes policy changes happen so fast that even as organizers, we're not able to stay true to our vision of really making sure community voice is at the front. And so it's very important for us to actually kind of take a step back and see where we can move our implementation work. Really continue the education advocacy. Now that we really feel we do have a policy, we have a few open doors to the city, we want to say, okay, how can people engage in it? How can people know about this, own this, tell other people? In fact, we have other coalitions and issues that are happening in Long Beach, and now those organizers know that when they bring speakers of other languages to these, you know, to our city hall, that they can get interpretation for them, right? That it can actually help our advocacy in so many ways. We've even done processes where we had a little fun with it. We made doors that had just wingdings as the title, and we asked people, all right, pick a door, pay your gas bill. You know, the idea that no one can read that door, right? What does it mean to have really an accessible city in many ways? And this culture shift. We're not just talking about language access. We're talking about access. We're talking about access for those who have traditionally just not been welcomed in these processes, who have always been sort of invisible in many ways. And an institutionalization, and by that I mean, we want actually all the departments to start to look at what does it mean to incorporate a little bit of funding for language access in our ongoing departmental budget. Some departments already do that. Largely, it's maybe folks with federal funding or different things, but how do we actually help people find the grants and put it in their budgets to continue to make this a priority, besides just a pot of money that's kind of coming from the city that's hard to get anyway? And just some lessons learned, right? Coalitions take time to build trust, to build those strong working relationships, but once you have that, we can do a lot together. Community organizing is crucial, right? And I think, you know, you're speaking to this as well in the ROC organizing, but I think a policy that is only directed at the top will not reflect the needs of the community. That needs to be a center of everyone's work. Targeted outreach, also engaging groups that have those relationships already is so important. Translating a piece of paper and like throwing it on the, you know, in the air does not mean that we'll end up in the hands of an LEP speaker. It is really necessary to work with folks who have that trust and base within the community. But also, a lot of our campaign was about civic engagement, and through our policy, through all the processes we worked on, residents were more civic engaged, had a chance to go to give their testimony, to be part of so many different opportunities. So it sort of, we're really excited to have that as a part. And also implementation, if we had not been there to see how things were going, we largely probably would not have the progress we have so far. So it did take sort of that motivation, and the organizations at the table really identifying this as a priority to continue working on. You know, and I mean, we're at the point where, you know, some city leadership will take credit and be really happy about it. And I think that's also, you know, a sign of progress as well, when people who have fought you will embrace what you have won, right? So that's our slogan, My Voice Matters. Mi voz cuenta. Mahalaga ang boses ko. I'm not so good at my Khmer pronunciation, but feel free to reach me, and thank you for your time.